Hi, I'm Pinakin Munshi. Today we are going to cover the chapter on the supply chain, how it is defined and explained. So let's see what we are going to cover as part of this chapter. The learning objectives in this chapter are to understand what is the supply chain, enlist the steps which are involved in the supply chain, learn about what are the stakeholders in the supply chain, who are the stakeholders, know the functions of the supply chain and the different type of roles therein, and also learn about the schematic of supply chain. Going forward, know the industries that heavily depend and bank on the supply chain. Know the importance of the supply chain for organizations, which we will see as we come across. Describe the reasons for disruption in the supply chain. Know the types of risk in the supply chain. So let's start with the definition of the supply chain. So one of the definition says that starting with the unprocessed raw material and ending with the final customer using the finished goods, the supply chain links many companies together. It's a very, very simple definition. So what it says is it's the linkage right from a material, the raw material starts till the finished product reaches the customer or the end user. The entire sequence of how the material moves is the supply chain. Let's look at the second one. The material and the informational interchanges in the logistics process or logistical process stretching from the acquisition of raw materials to delivery of finished products to the end user. All vendor services providers and customers are links in the supply chain. So here they have introduced one more aspect, and that is material and informational interchanges. So let's understand that supply chain is not only about the movement of material, there is also information interchange. That means there is an exchange of information in the supply chain. And this we will see as we go forward. The supply chain is the process through which a company creates and distributes its products and services to the end user. It includes several specific elements: production planning, material sourcing, transportation, transportation management, warehouse management, and demand management. These functions are tightly integrated to provide the products and services to the end user in an efficient manner. So here you see in this definition given by Scott and Oldfield, they have gone one step ahead and they have said that the supply chain includes many cogs and wheels, including, you know, the distribution, you have the transportation, which is the logistics, sourcing as one of the functions, warehousing as another functions, and we will see in detail how each of these are very important and what kind of a role they play. So this is another expansion on the definition of supply chain. A supply chain is a network that creates products and services and delivers those products and services to the customers. Supply chains include marketing, sales, financing, procurement, processing, operations, maintenance, service, and logistics. Again, this is a further expansion on the definition of supply chain. So again, they say it's a network, which means it's a chain of events. It's a network which connects products and services. So far, we were talking products. Now, supply chain will also apply to services. So here we have introduced additional elements like marketing, sales, finance, which are very important. In the earlier definition, we saw procurement, warehousing, transportation, etc. So this is a slight enlargement of the definition. So each of these definition is valid depending upon the point of view that you hold. A supply chain is a network of individuals and companies who are involved in creating a product and delivering it to the customer. Links on the chain begin with the producers of the raw material and end when the van delivers the finished product to the end user. Equally true that a supply chain need not be of a single company, because there are various individuals, companies which are involved in the manufacture of the raw material or production of the raw material. There are intermediates which could be made by other companies. So it could be various companies which are involved, including the logistics, including the distribution. So all these are the various cogs and wheels in the supply chain network. Supply chain is defined as a group of interconnected participating companies that add value to a stream of transformed inputs from their source of origin to the end product or services that are deemed by the designated end consumer. So this is a definition by Lou. And again, it's how you look at the supply chain. Again, the message is the same, that it's a group of companies interconnected by purpose, because everyone is actually instrumental in creation of the product or the service, which ultimately has to be delivered to the end consumer. So let's come to the schematic of supply chain. So according to Lou, a supply chain is defined by several key characteristics. Firstly, it is formed when multiple companies participate in it. Secondly, the participating companies in a supply chain typically have different business ownership, indicating legal independence or legal entities. So that means effectively what he's saying is that there are different companies which are participating in a supply chain, which may or may not be true, because I will explain this point subsequently. So indicating legal independence, that they are legal entities, separate companies, not connected to the company either from whom they are sourcing or the company to whom they are supplying. Thirdly, these companies are interconnected by their shared commitment to enhancing the value of the material flow. So every company, every individual, every entity is adding value. So it could be that, one company is making a raw material, the second is adding value, making an intermediate, the third one, just take an example, like you have a company which makes engineering parts. There is a second company which is actually assembling it into, let's say, an engine for the automobiles. And there is a third company which is assembling the engine into the vehicle, into a car, and making the automobile. And, this is how, so at every stage, every vendor, every company is adding value. So each company receives transformed inputs and delivers value-added output as part of the material flow. Just a word here, there is one exception to this definition, that they have to be separate companies, which are multiple companies, which are independent. Take the example of backward integrated companies. Like, for example, one of the companies that I worked for was an aluminum company. The company was involved right from mining of the bauxite, which is the ore for aluminum, processing it to make alumina, processing it further to make metal, processing it further to make aluminum sheets, aluminum foil, extrusions, etc. So it's the same company, same entity, the value chain. There are different units, different locations where the material moves, and at every stage, there is a value addition. So that is one of the exceptions where you have a value chain, you have a supply chain where the same entity is actually carrying on the various activities. One more definition, one more schematic. A supply chain can be visualized as a series of interconnected companies involved in adding value. The supplier's supplier is positioned upstream in the material flow with the customer downstream. In the middle, there is usually an OEM. OEM is an original equipment manufacturer, also referred to as the OBM, that is the original brand manufacturer of the local company. So imagine that you're talking of a TV manufacturer. So you have the suppliers who supply the components or the body of the television. That is the OEM who is actually assembling, making a TV, testing it, and then making it ready for shipment. And then, of course, you have the logistics company, you have the warehousing company, you have the distributor, you have retailers who are actually selling it to the customer, and then you have the end consumer. So this is one such example. So the basics of supply chain. So you have the supplier who is supplying the raw material or the components, as in case of the television example that we saw. Then you have the supplier. Then you have the original equipment manufacturer. You have the distributor. You have the retailer who is actually having the showrooms, etc. Because distributor normally has only a warehouse. He doesn't do the distribution. The retailer either could be a brick and mortar store. That means he has a showroom, etc. Or it could be a e-commerce platform. And then finally, you have the consumer. So this is a rough schematic. Again, here what they have highlighted is you can have multiple suppliers, and they are supplying to multiple customers. Now the customers are actually vendors or suppliers to the OEM. The OEM is actually manufacturing the goods and then passing it on to the downstream processes like logistics, warehousing, distribution, retailer, and end consumer. And you can even see the flow. The flow of material starts from the earliest the supplier or vendor, and it moves downstream. Whereas information, demand, money, all these, the finances, they flow in the reverse direction. Because naturally, when materials are supplied, you also have to pay for it. So that's how the information, demand information, the finances, so they flow in the reverse direction. So one more definition. This is the supply chain schematic for material flow. Manufacturing supply chains involve the movement of material from raw material at the start to finished products at the end. For instance, in a furniture making supply chain, wood is sourced from the forest at the beginning and results in home furniture at the end. So what we just saw in the previous, and here we are talking of a manufacturing supply chain, because we saw there are two types of supply chain. One will be for goods and one will be for services. So here we are talking of goods. The consistent transformation of wood throughout the chain, culminating in the furniture, establishes a distinct boundary for the supply chain. It is important to note that the furniture supply chain is distinct from a chocolate manufacturing supply chain due to the unique material flow that do not intersect. So just take an example that the supply chain in terms of the furniture will first involve people who are actually growing the trees. The trees are then felled and these are transported to the sawmill. At the sawmill, they will cut it into certain geometrical shapes. These then go to the furniture manufacturer, who will then cut it into and basically give it the various features for interlocking and making it into a furniture. Then, of course, there will be the polishing and various other things to complete the furniture. There may be upholstery involved. And finally, they will pack the material and then give it for the next stages. Compared to that, in a chocolate unit, the cocoa beans, etc., will be the input. So again, the people who grow the cocoa beans, they will be the raw material supplier. There'll be another agency which may be processing the cocoa beans and roasting it and, making it suitable for making a chocolate. They may be even grinding it, etc., and providing the chocolate, or the cocoa in a powder form. And then finally, this is supplied to the chocolate manufacturer, who actually blends it with other ingredients and makes it into chocolates. So they do the final product, they do the packaging, and then ship it out for for distributor and ultimately for the retail. So commercial flow or product flow of goods. So the entire supply chain embodies a transactional commercial flow. This indicates that the ownership of the material flow within the supply chain transitions from one company to another, from supplier to supplier. And this is very true because at every stage, there is a supplier, there is a buyer, and there is a commercial transaction. That means you have to purchase the material. You have to pay for the material. There are commercial terms involved. So this happens. And mind you, even the example that I gave you of the aluminum company, even there, although it's the same entity, there is something called as a transfer pricing, and there are within the company, they have to pay one another, although it may be notional because it's a same company, but there is a transfer of credit, you know, for the material which has been supplied by the upstream unit. So this is the commercial aspect. The buying and selling process continuously transfers ownership of the material flow from the supplier to the buyer until it reaches the end consumer at the end of the supply chain. So at every stage, there is a commercial transaction. There is a buying and selling process, and this continues till the end. So even when a company, the OEM, transfers the product to the distributor has to pay for it. When the distributor supplies the material to the retailer has to pay the distributor. And likewise, when we purchase a product, the consumer, end consumer, then we are paying for the product as well. So commercial flow and product flow, this is continued. So this transactional commercial flow occurs only in a supply chain involving multiple companies. Conversely, in the case of an organization, there may be material flow, but no change in ownership, resulting in absence of the commercial flow. So the example that we gave, you know, that the aluminum company, the same entity, same organization, material flows through it. So although, as I said, that there is a notional transaction, but there is no real buy and sell. Also, you know, if the activities are happening within the organization under a single roof, so it could be multiple activities. Take the example of the chocolate. Now, let us say that we are getting the bins directly from the bin growers, and we are roasting the bins, grinding the bin, and then making the chocolate all under a single roof. So in that case, there will be no exchange of ownership because all these things happens within a single organization, and hence there is an absence of commercial flow. So now let's come to the money flow. So every supply chain relies on a finance flow, which can be likened to the bloodstream of the entire system. So we already saw that you have to pay for the material that you are getting from the vendor, your supplier. Without this crucial flow of money, a supply chain is destined to fail. I mean, it's common sense. You're getting material and you have to pay for it. Nobody is doing charity. So there has to be exchange of money against the goods. So it's a transaction. So interestingly, there is only one source from which the finance flows originates, and that is the end consumer. So imagine you have the raw material that is sent to the first buyer, who processes it, passes on to the second one, who processes, goes to the OEM, he makes the final product, goes to the distributor, goes to the retailer, and goes to the consumer. Consumer ultimately pays for the material. So based on what the consumer is paying, the retailer pays to the warehouse. So the distributor. Distributor pays to the OEM, and this sequence continues. It may not be that, you know, the companies are waiting for the consumer to pay, but it's an ongoing continuous process. So the payments are being, continuously made for the materials which are supplied based on the commercial terms which have been agreed upon. This realization has given rise to the notion of a single entity perspective in supply chain management, which serves as a valuable basis for integration and collaboration. So the single entity perspective is that customer pays. I mean, this is a common thing that we say even in the industry. We say the customer pays your salary. Because ultimately, if the customer doesn't buy your product, then you can't sell your product. And if you can't sell a product, then where are you going to get the money from? So this is how we integrate, and we refer it to as a collaboration. By distributing and sharing this singular financial resource equitably throughout the supply chain, a more harmonious relationship can be established between the contributions made by participating companies and the rewards they receive. So what it means is, we saw at the beginning that at every stage there is a value addition. So there is an equitable distribution of the financial resources. So maybe you are selling a product for 100 rupees, the raw material was costing 20 rupees. So the financial rewards which are passed on to the various value adders or people who are adding value will be proportionate to the value addition that they are doing. And this is how the rewards are received by them. So coming to the information flow. All supply chains rely on information flows to function effectively. We saw that in the diagram or the illustration, that information flow is also very important, and we'll see why. So these information flows include demand information. How much has to be produced? Because the OEM needs to know what the demand will be like so that they can gear up. Not only that, they have to inform their suppliers what raw materials or what components will be required. So if there is a change in demand, it could be upwards, downwards, whatever, they have to make amends. They need to make changes. So demand information, forecasting information, production and scheduling information, because even the production scheduling has to be changed. Let us say that a company makes 10 products. Now, you can understand that those 10 products will not continue to sell at the same rate. There'll be fluctuation in the market depending upon the changes in the demand. So even your production and scheduling will need to be changed to take care of these changes which are happening. So the information flow is required for every stage of the supply chain. So production and scheduling information, as well as design and new product introduction information. So even based on the market demand or market requirement, you may have to evolve, you may have to improve upon your designs. So constantly every company is actually working on improving the design of their products, and they are introducing new products. One example is mobile phones. You will see that every few months, every company comes out with a new model. So this is, based on the competition activity, based on the customer requirement, based on the new technology available. So you had 3G, then you have 4G, now you have 5G. So you have to come out with new products to cater to and incorporate the new technology. So all these, information is the key. Unlike the physical flow of material, information can move in both upstream and downstream. It is worth noting that most information flows are unique to each supply chain. So how do we say that demand information is actually upstream? So it basically flows from the market to the designers. And there are certain things which flow downstream. That means new product introduction. So let us say the design team has designed a new product. The OEM has actually finalized the design, the product, everything. And then they will pass on the information to marketing and the retail to actually advertise it and create a demand in the market for that product before the product can be launched. So the information flow is both ways. For example, information about women's fashion clothing is irrelevant to a motorbike supply chain. So this is, we are talking about every supply chain, and the information flow in the supply chain is different depending upon the industry that we are talking about. So fashion clothing and motorbike, naturally, the information flow in both the cases cannot be the same. Each supply chain has its own specific set of information flows that are crucial for its operations, and these are typically safeguarded from other supply chain. For example, in fashion, what is the latest fashion? What are the trends? What are the colors which are in vogue? The same thing is not true for motorbike. In motorbike, it will be more of technical advancements or things like you have a 350cc bike. Maybe the market has a demand for a 500cc bike. So the information flow will be different for different industries. So the essential stages in supply chain, as explained by Hayes. So one is the sourcing of raw material, which we talked about, strategizing the inventory and production procedures to maintain a proper equilibrium between supply and demand. And we'll come to this is a very important topic, which we will touch upon in more depth in the coming chapters also. Procuring or manufacturing the necessary materials for the final product. This is another very important aspect in manufacturing. Whether you should make or buy, whether you should procure a component or a raw material, or you should manufacture it. Third one is assembling components and conducting product testing. So we saw the example of, let's say, the television, or it can be the mobile. You have to assemble the components and then you have to test the product before it leaves the facility. Why? Because any complaint or any product defect which is detected after the product has left the manufacturing unit can be very expensive. You will need a after sales service person to actually visit the customer and to resolve the problem. Also, in case the product is defective, it has to be replaced, which is going to be substantial cost. So the product testing is important aspect. Packaging the product for either immediate shipment or storage in inventory. So depending upon whether you have a pull or a push system, a pull system is where you are making things as per the market demand. So it doesn't have to stay in your inventory. The moment it is packed and moved to the warehouse, it is ready to ship. There is another case where you're making materials based on forecast. So you say that, okay, this month I'm going to sell 10,000 television screens. And you manufacture 10,000 screens and then you wait for the market or the distributors to place orders. So in that case, you are going to keep the finished product in the storage. Transporting and delivering the completed product to the distributor, retailer, or end consumer. So in some industries or some products, you could be transporting it directly to the end consumer, direct supply. In some cases, you could be giving it to the retailer, as in the case of e-commerce, etc. Or you give it to the distributor, who is basically a stockist in, let's say, various geographical regions, and who caters to the retailers in that particular market. So this is basically transporting and delivering the material to distributor, retailer, or the end consumer. Offering customer service assistance for returned items. Now, customer service assistance is not only for the returned items. Take the example of white goods. It's an AC or a refrigerator or a television. Normally, there is an engineer who will visit you after the item has been delivered. He will come and install it. So he will open the packing, inspect it. He will install it, give a demo, give you a short training on how to use the device, if there are any precautions to be taken, any special features. The second aspect, yes, is the returned items. So in case there is a complaint and the product has to be returned, so in that case, they will ascertain whether really the product is defective, whether it can be repaired, not repaired. If it cannot be repaired, then it has to be returned to the, their service center or the warehouse, from where it will go back to the manufacturing unit or refurbishing unit. So a supply chain consists of interconnected components that work together to produce finished products for the customer. So let's consider the automobile. We have already taken that example. Before a consumer purchases a car, iron ore is extracted from the earth and transported to a plant. At the plant, the ore is transformed into steel, which is then used to create the chassis of the automobile. So let's look at the steps here. You have the iron ore, which is converted into steel slabs. Those slabs may be then further converted into sheets or bars, which are molded or stamped into the chassis of the vehicle. Or it could be like, the engine block, it's normally cast. So in that case, the steel is cast into the engine block. The engine block is then machined to precision, and then they assemble the engine. Likewise, they assemble the various other components. Various components such as the engines, batteries, electrical parts, rubber tires, a metal body, and paint are assembled to complete the car. So once the car is manufactured, it is sold to the end consumer in a retail setting. Very easy to understand, common sense. So this example effectively demonstrates the involvement of different stakeholders in the supply chain. And which are these? So one is the producers. So producers are responsible for the production or cultivation of the basic component used in the manufacture of goods. So as we saw, one is the production. It could be metal, from ore you're making into metal, or cultivation in case of furniture, etc., where you have to cultivate the wood, the trees, etc., which are going to yield the wood, or it could be the cocoa beans. So again, that's a cultivation. Vendors, on the other hand, engage in the buying and selling of these materials. So the vendors, there could be middlemen who specialize in sourcing of this material. So sometimes the farmers are too small. So you have people who are actually sourcing the cocoa beans from a large number of farmers. And then they are trading in these items, and they will sell it to the chocolate manufacturers, etc. So they engage in buying and selling of these materials. Same is the case for wood. Manufacturers take this material and transform them into finished goods. Common sense. Transporters, also known as logistics providers, are involved in the movement of these goods across the globe. And transportation or logistics is not restricted to finished goods. Right from the raw material, which has to be moved to, let's say, the people who are making the intermediates. Like, for example, we said the timber, which is felled, has to be taken to the sawmill. At the sawmill, once they cut it into, wooden beams, etc., then they have to be transported to the furniture factory. At the furniture factory, they need to be transported then to the distributor. So at every stage, logistics is involved, or transportation is involved. Supply chain managers play a crucial role in ensuring the smooth operation of various processes, including planning, sourcing of raw materials, manufacturing, delivery, and returns. We will see this as we go forward, that it's a very complex thing, and the coordination is required because everything, all of them have to run at the same speed. It cannot be that somebody is making more and somebody is making less, because you will then have a situation where either you will have overstock of the raw material or the intermediate or the finished product, or you will have a stock out. So they all have to be synchronized for optimum operations. Retailers are responsible for selling the goods either through online platforms or physical stores. We already talked about e-commerce or physical stores, the brick and mortar stores. Finally, consumers are the end users who purchase and utilize these goods and services. So you may either buy the things from a store or order it online. Ultimately, you are the consumer. So these are the various functions of the supply chain. So we will look at this in detail, starting with purchasing. So at every stage, every organization, every supplier in the supply chain has a purchasing. So whether somebody, if there is a trader who is sourcing the cocoa beans, he has a purchasing organization. He may not have a manufacturing because he's not adding any value. He's simply trading in the item. But he does have to do a inventory management. He has to do demand planning. He has a warehouse. He has to transport it and give it to his customer, which is the chocolate manufacturer. So while supply chain is a very broad career field, it has 7 primary functions, which we saw, starting with purchasing, manufacturing, inventory management, demand planning, warehousing, transportation, and customer services. We have explained this in some depth. We'll go further into this, each of these areas. These areas may appear to be independent functions, but in an efficient supply chain, they must interact to a great degree and are very dependent upon one another. So even when we say that, you know, purchasing or manufacturing, inventory management is crucial there. And it's an integral part at every stage, because in purchasing the raw material or the components, your inventory management plays a role. Manufacturing, it plays a role. Are you manufacturing what is required by the customer, or simply you're manufacturing something which is going to lie in the inventory? So inventory management is very crucial. And demand planning plays the major role there, because demand planning tells you what the demand is going to be. So that explains the last para, you know, which says that they are all interconnected and they have to operate efficiently. They are not totally independent. They are integral to the process. Let's now go one by one. Purchasing. So this refers to the process of acquiring goods or services to achieve the objective of an organization. So whatever raw material, components, and mind you, purchasing, yes, the key activity will be for the product being manufactured. But there will be a lot of other things that a company will need to purchase. There are operating supplies. There are, like for example, if you have an engineering unit, you'll require lubricants, you'll require spare parts. So all these come under the ambit of purchasing. But here, while we are focusing on the supply chain, we are mainly focusing on the raw material or the components which go into the finished product. The primary goal of the purchasing includes 1, ensuring the quality and value of a company's products. The company is aiming to make the right product, that is the right quality of the product at the right price. So the most important thing is your raw material have to be of the defined quality, the right quality. Unless you have the right quality of material, you cannot deliver on the right quality of the finished product. Minimizing the amount of cash tied up in inventory. So we said that if you have less inventory, there is a risk of stocking out. But if you have more inventory, you are blocking your capital, because whatever inventory you are purchasing, you have to pay for it. So you are blocking your capital in the form of inventory. And when you are holding very high amount of inventory, there is a risk of deterioration, obsolescence, damages, there could be, stealing of the components, etc., which sometimes does happen, especially for high value items. So whole point is, that we try to keep the inventory at an optimum level. Optimum so that we don't run out of stocks and we don't engage or we don't block too much money into the inventory. Third point, maintaining a steady flow of inputs to ensure a continuous flow of output and enhancing the competitive position of the organization. So continuous flow, this is what we talk about the stockouts. If there is a stock out, then the production, the manufacturing will come to a halt. So we have to ensure that there is no stoppage of the manufacturing activity and the product supply continues unhindered. And enhancing the competitive position of the organization. So when you have the right quality, you have the right price at which you are buying, then you are competitive. Because if you are able to produce the product at a very competitive price, it means that you are going to make a better profit. So cost actually drives the profit. Today, for most of the items, the price is dictated by the market. Cost is what is controlled by the organization. And that's why it's important that you keep the cost within check, keep the quality high, so that you don't have customer complaints, etc. Because if you have too many complaints, then customers will lose confidence. Today, I mean, the world is very transparent. Even you go on an e-commerce platform, you can see so many reviews of a product. And if you see negative reviews, you are actually deterred from buying that product. So enhancing the competitiveness is not only cost, but also the quality of the product, which ultimately comes to quality of the raw material or the components.